Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is renowned sculptor Anna Sofia Maug, raised in the Swedish province of Dalarna. Anna Sofia has a diverse portfolio of works, ranging from small, elegant ceramics to large-scale outdoor installations and innovative ice sculptures. Anna Sofia made her first artwork for Ice Hotel in 2006, the Hotel of Ice and Snow, 200 kilometers north of the Arctic Circle in Jukkasjärvi in Sweden. Returning almost every winter since then, she has created six art suites on her own, been involved in several Ice Hotel's art projects, and taught ice sculpting during the winter seasons. Anna Sofia graduated with an Applied Art and Ceramics, Master of Fine Art from the School of Design and Crafts from the Gutenberg University in Sweden, and attended the School of Crafts at Leksand. Her works have been exhibited in group and solo shows throughout Sweden and internationally, such as in China, the US, Belgium, France, Germany, Russia, and Korea. Her works are held in numerous collections, such as the National Museum of Fine Arts in Stockholm, Sweden, and the World Ceramic Center in South Korea, the National Public Art Council of Sweden, and others. She has been written about in various ceramics publications, the Ice Hotel magazine, and received a number of prestigious awards and grants. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for letting me be on the air.
You have a very diverse portfolio of beautifully crafted works, and your ice sculptures have captured global attention at the Swedish Ice Hotel in Jukkasjärvi. Sculpting in ice must require a unique skill set with a rhythmic carving touch. Can you describe one of your ice sculptures and the process as it unfolds from design to completion?
Well, I usually have an idea that sits for quite some time. And recent years, it has been an animal, and I'm just kind of get into that animal's nature. So basically, I'm just collecting images about it, and then I try to sculpt it in a small version in clay. I'm a ceramist, so clay is a natural material to use, and it's easy to shape. And then I upscale it when I go big in ice and snow.
And can you describe one of your pieces for us?
Well, one of the latest one I did was Elephant in the Room at Ice Hotel, and it was an art suite, which is, it's a piece of art, but it's also a hotel room for guests where they stay over the night. And I just wanted to put this huge life-size elephant in snow and ice inside the room, which it could just barely fit in there. I had to fit in a bed also, so I had to cut the elephant a little bit in half in order to get it in. So yeah, it's a huge African savanna elephant, one of the biggest mammal I think in the world right now, and it was kind of naturally sculpted in snow with texture and all.
So how do you find the difference between building in clay and actually carving to sculpt the ice?
Well, clay, then you can, it's very free, you can add material and you can remove. And it's soft, and you can work directly with your hands. With ice, you can only remove. You may be able to glue some ice parts of ice together, but basically it's like carving from a block of stone. But it's easier since if you have a, and you need a tool, of course. You can't do it with your bare hands. You need a tool, a sharp chisel or knife or something. It's not hands-on. I need a tool between me and the material. And it's cold, and the temperature can vary a lot, and also then the ice changes during that. So if it's like around 0 or -2 Celsius, it's different. And if it's -15 Celsius, it's a complete different thing, more fragile.
I can imagine it would be very difficult. Would you like to tell us how you became an ice hotel sculptor and what has been most exhilarating and exciting about your adventures working with the other artists on these projects?
Well, back in 2006, I had been working as a professional artist, basically in ceramics, for 5 years after my master's degree. And I lived in the region, the same county where Ice Hotel is situated. And I've been there visiting the hotel many times as a tourist. And when I realized, oh, well, there are real artists coming here and doing this, I applied myself. I found out that they have a jury, and they want artists to apply from all over the world with a concept and an idea. And I did, and I got in. That was my first time, yeah.
And what was it like working with other artists from around the world and working on this type of sculpture?
Yeah, that's a new experience, since in my own studio, working as a potter or ceramist, I need a lot of time to be alone to work, actually, to produce art. But at Isotel, that's like a big meeting place and one of the biggest art projects actually in Sweden every year. So meeting artists also not maybe based in clay or ceramics, but it can be any material or architect is very exciting. So you widen your own horizon as an artist in that sense.
And did it lead you to other large-scale works that you worked on that you have exhibited in public places or in galleries?
It has led to, I've been working a bit with public commissions in Sweden and increasing the scale. With clay, you are limited to the size of the kiln to fire your piece. But I discovered I can fire parts and put them together after the firing.
How did you start out in your practice, and what were some of the things you discovered that allowed you to branch into so many different styles and materials like mosaics and pottery, as well as the other things like ice sculptures?
It may seem like a wide range, but I really see a thread going through all this. I started with clay. First, I started at an art school. Mm-hmm. In Sweden, we have a lot of pre-art school before the university. And in one of those, I went for a year and I tried all kinds of materials, clay, metal, wood, textile. And I got a bit hooked. And I must say, it was the throwing on the wheel that got my attention. It's something with just sit and try to make a bowl or a cup on the wheel. So that was the start. And then I focused more and more on clay. So I ended up with this master degree in applied art in ceramics a few years later. And going from there to ice and snow, I would say as a kid, I was always the one playing with clay, or at winter time, because I'm lucky to be brought up in a winter landscape, I could mold the snow and have fun. Right. And basically that's what I continue doing at Isotel.
You also write in your biography that your work stretches from a reserved design language to highly figurative artworks, expressing your ideas subtly, elusively, or even silently. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by this with a few examples maybe of your works?
If I would take two examples, I would say that the most maybe abstract would be some kind of sculptural plates that I did. Knowing the environment and the landscape and the surroundings that affects me, I would say maybe that both the sculpture plates, this what I would say is abstract work, is highly not figurative in a living piece, but in a landscape piece. It's realistic, but also doing the figurative animals. But it's interesting, this. It's okay, it's abstract and it's figurative and it's all in between. And I think it has to do with the materials also. Because people ask me, why don't you do this? The clay work that I used to do before with the sculpture plates, it's a realism in ice and snow, like trying to describe the feeling of the snowy landscapes, the frozen landscapes. But it's not interesting for me to bring that concept into the real material of the frozen landscape. So it's much more interesting for me to sculpt an elephant in ice and snow than to try to make cracks and frozen patterns in snow and ice.
You've returned to your hometown to teach at the Luxen Folkhögskola. What do you enjoy most about sharing your experiences and discoveries with your students?
The thing is, going back to this school is also discovering how much I learned since I left that school. And I have to constantly remind myself to limit a little bit of the knowledge that I teach out. I have to start in another level, because otherwise it would be too difficult for the students. So, but what I enjoy the most is, now I've done 1 year and now I'm following This means that many of the students, they go 2 years. And now I'm following the second graders. I've been with them 1 year, and now I'm following them into the second year. And to see how they evolve, how their work evolve, and how they understand, and all of a sudden they can use what I tried to teach them half a year ago. It's like they are discovering things. So that is the most amazing thing, to see these people grow in a way, artistically. It's really fantastic. And I haven't done that before. So in a way, I completely turned this around from my own artist ego to focus on the students and their processes.
Do you have any exhibitions coming up or any exciting sculptures planned that you'd like to tell us about?
No, just for my garden. Gosh, I have a small farm now. I'm living the dream, the life of my dreams right now. We managed to purchase a small house in a beautiful area, and it's an old farm from 400 years ago. So an old garden, and I just keep moving around my sculptures in the garden.
Nice.
I think it will come in time. I've been moving my studio a lot also around this area, around Aisatel up in the north of Sweden. It's also a mining area. We have a mining industry. So I've been moving my studio a lot, and a ceramic studio is very heavy, a lot of things. And right now, by moving and changing life, my studio is not up and running at this moment, but it will be in time. So it's more like I'm doing all these steps so I can be creative in my own studio, maybe within a year or 2 years. We will see. But apart from that, it's the school and it's ceramic, so I'm surrounded with a lot of ceramic nerds, which is good. And also the contact with Aisatel, so I could go up there and do more projects. And I have some projects that my brain is cooking, but they are not ready to go out yet.
Well, we'll look forward to when they do come out. It will be really interesting to see them. And I'd like to thank you so much for speaking with us today and taking the time to share your insight and story with us. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. My pleasure also.
Thank you. That was sculptor Anna Sofia Maug speaking with us from her home in Sweden. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Joining us this evening is Alan Lakovetsky, a highly renowned Winnipeg contemporary ceramicist whose innovative high-fire techniques and process are internationally inspired. His early study at the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, the University of North Dakota, and his mentorship with master potters in Canada, the UK, Australia, and Asia have contributed to his many years of producing exquisite works shown in exhibitions around the globe. Alan's studio is located outside Winnipeg, surrounded by brilliant natural landscapes of the prairies near Okamic Marsh that he embraces in his pottery. Alan has taught ceramics in numerous universities, done workshops, and exhibited in Canada, US, France, Japan, China, Korea, and Australia. His ceramics are in many public and private collections worldwide. He has also been inducted into the International Ceramic Artists Association based in China. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Can you tell us what first inspired you to become a potter?
Well, that goes back a long, long way, actually. My father was in the furnace business, so I was around furnaces a lot. And I remember as a kid watching our furnace downstairs and looking through this little mica window and seeing the fire starting up. And that was quite exciting for me. But not only that, beside the furnace, he had an old handmade crock that he made wine in because it kept the wine warm. But I remember the nice smell that it gave off. And then also caressing my hand over the handle, and my fingers fell into the thumb marks that the potter had left when they attached the handle, and realized, ooh, this thing is handmade. made, somebody was actually there and left that message of that thumbprint. And I think that might have been one of the sparks that lit my fire that eventually came to me later in life.
So who are some of your most important mentors during your artistic development and over the course of your career?
I started out in British Columbia on one of the Gulf Islands, and I was interested in Zen philosophy, and that kind of led me to the Japanese tea ceremony and looking at these tea bowls that they used for the ceremony and finding out there was much more to them than just a bowl that you drink tea out of. And that kind of led me to looking at pottery in general and who was out there and where I can find information. I picked a book from the library, and it was called A Potter's Book by Bernard Leet. And it was the perfect book to pick because he expounded on the philosophy behind pottery, and particularly Korean, Chinese, and Japanese pottery. And that really was one of the things that ignited my fire as well. And I went on to study with one of his apprentices, John Reeve, at Nova Scotia College of Art and Design. And that really got me started.
Some of the other ones along the way? You were in Australia and you did some other work there and teaching. Who else was influential at that time?
Well, I did come back to Winnipeg after living in BC and came across an exhibition by Robert Archambault at the Thomas Galleries and thought this work is the kind of work that I'm very interested in, the kind of work that I want to make. So I did come back and studied with Robert for 2 years at the University of Manitoba. That was before I actually went to Nova Scotia College of Art and Design. So that was pretty major as well, and it continues to be major because I'm constantly in contact with Robert. So he's been one of my more important mentors. But aside from that, after Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, I went to Australia, and I worked with Peter Rushforth, who is one of the original potters, grandfathers of pottery in Australia, and also Gwyn Hanson-Piggott, who was also very prominent both there and in Europe. She was an apprentice with Bernard Leach, Lucy Rhee, and Hans Koper. So they all had a different kind of influence on me, and I think it was really important to have that kind of mentorship with artists who were kind of operating at a high level internationally. So I feel very fortunate to have had contact with these people.
So can you describe a particular piece or series for us that will give us an idea of the clay materials you prefer to use and the process for creating your pottery?
Early on, way back when I was a kid, I was always very interested in fossils, and they kind of blew me over, the idea that these critters have left this message that really is hundreds of millions of years old. And, you know, the rocks, the age of the rocks and the geological processes that these things have gone through really have cemented my interest in material. Natural material. So looking at clay is hundreds of millions of years old. And I just think all these particles, where did they come from? Where were they originally? And what journey have they been on over all this time to get to my hands? And if they could tell a story, they would be some pretty amazing stories. So I respond to clay because I feel that it's a very sacred material. It's a living material. It's so impressionable. You just lightly touch it and you leave your fingerprint in it. And you can see in ancient pottery, the potter did exactly that. You know, as they picked the pot up, they left their fingerprint in it. And it's kind of a message that they've left. And I somehow find that quite fascinating.
You also, in your practice, use a traditional treadle wheel when you're making your pottery, and it's part of your process. What is it about that that you prefer?
Well, I use a combination of foot-powered wheels. One is a treadle wheel, and it's a wheel that used to be used by one of the grandfathers of pottery in the USA, Warren McKenzie. So I have it here in my studio, and I consider it quite an honor to have it and to work on the wheel that he spent many years working on. And I have another kick wheel. It's a different type of wheel where you have a heavy flywheel and you have to get it moving, and then it has its own momentum. You don't have to constantly kick it like the treadle wheel. But it's significant for several reasons, because I like to use my own energy to create my work. Also, compared to an electric wheel, they don't have the motor noise that I don't like. It's not a creative sound for me. I like to listen to the wind in the trees and the birds outside, so I can't do that if I have a motor constantly making that noise. But this other kick wheel is significant for me because it was one of the wheels I learned on when I first went to the University of Manitoba. And they, a few years ago, decided to sell them because I guess they take up too much space. And I was able to buy one. So I have one of the original wheels that I learned on in my studio. And it feels really nice to have it there.
That's great. And is it important that your works are functional as well as aesthetically pleasing?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the functionality, the concept behind it is that it serves an everyday purpose. For everyday people, it's not only for other potters or other artists. I get the response from people all the time that, you know, I just love your work, particularly mugs. I use your mug, your coffee mug, every morning when I get up, and I just love it. And I realized one time that, you know, I have hundreds and hundreds of those out there, and it's fantastic that people, hundreds of people, thousands of people perhaps, are sitting there every morning at an important time of their day, just waking up with my mug, and it's quite an intimate thing because they put that mug to their lips. I just love the fact that I'm able to provide that opportunity for them. It's a form of communication I find really important for me. It gives my work a real sense of purpose that I respond to.
Your works are in a number of collections around the globe where their functionality is experienced and benefited by a number of people. How did your travels contribute to the main ideas and techniques you learned, and how did they contribute to your artistic development?
I'd like to have cultural shock, if you like, influence me in a way. It's a funny thing to say, but when I go to different cultures, and most of them, of course, are much older than Western Canadian American culture, usually the places I go to have many, many years, centuries of ceramic history, and it's very interesting to be in that environment, to see the areas where traditional historical pots have been made for hundreds and hundreds of years, and also witness the techniques that the potters and artists are using still today. It has an influence in some way. I don't think about it too much. I allow the whatever influence it does have to go through a natural filtering process. How it comes out, I don't really pay much attention to, actually, but I know it's there. And the more traveling I do and the more work I do in other areas of the world seems to give me a sense of depth and more confidence in my work. So there's a point where the work just starts to make itself. And I think that's from all the different influences I've had from many parts of the world.
So with the cultural exchange of ideas and the many influences from around the world, what do you feel are the advantages of living in Winnipeg and having your studio in a rural environment in the Canadian art scene?
I've always been interested in the rural environment. Even as a kid, I lived in West Gildon, in the most northern part of Winnipeg, when there was nothing past my street, basically. It was all country, and now it's Garden City and the maples and all that. But I used to take my bicycle out to the prairies and just somehow responded to nature and being outside the city. But being from Winnipeg, I think it's a wonderful city, a quiet, sort of out-of-the-way place. It happens to be the center of North America. I don't know if spiritually that has any effect on people, but I think it's a relatively quiet place. The politics here are not dramatic in any way. I think it's very safe. It's a good community to live in. And particularly, I'm very proud to be Canadian. The more I travel around, the more I realize that Canada is one of the very best countries in the world. And all the people, international people that I'm in touch with, think the same. They have an opinion that compared to most places that they've been or where they're from, Canada seems to be one of the more stable countries. So I tend to agree with them and feel very fortunate that I'm from here.
You've also researched many aspects of designing and creating ceramic works and shared your knowledge and findings with students as a professor and teacher in art schools. What do you focus on, and what is your main advice for students interested in pursuing a career as a potter?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, as you gain more experience, I think you have much more to teach the students. And I think it's more than just teaching a curriculum. I think one of the things that I have to contribute most to students is the mentorship. You want to be able to impart information to students that will take them past the school. There's a life outside of school, and I feel it's important to give students at least a glimpse of what it's like to be out there and how to survive. That's the big thing. If you're standing in front of a class teaching and you feel that the majority of them won't survive, it doesn't feel very good. So trying to create an atmosphere where students are not only learning about what you're trying to teach them in terms of a curriculum, it's important to provide them with that kind of information and to think about what's next. It's exciting for me to be in that environment where young people are enthusiastic. They want to learn, and they're excited about what they're learning. I feel that it's a privilege and an honor to be there, and I know that they sacrifice a lot to be there, and they pay a lot. So it's not easy, especially nowadays, to be a student, and important for me to feel that I'm giving them as much as I possibly can.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on our show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you for having me. Always interesting for me to talk about my work and my career. It sort of gives me sort of an opportunity to take another sort of look at myself from another direction. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
That was contemporary ceramicist Alan Lekovetsky speaking with us from his studio near Oak Hammock Marsh in Manitoba. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.